everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race Recap here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. My name is Mike Bloom. I am not pleading the eighth. I'm going to be here to talk everything about this week of RuPaul's Drag Race, but of course, I am not alone. But to make things a little different, I want to start off with an intro question for my two lovely co-hosts. If you had to pick a drag fairy tale princess persona, much like the queens this episode, what would your persona be? Let's keep the sidekicks in the computer animation cell for the time being. But Liana Boris, what would your counterpart be?
I think mine would have to be something like Princess Day Drinking, something along those lines. I think my sidekick would maybe be a margarita. I would just wear a bathing suit. It would be fine.
Todrick Hall loves inanimate objects that have been brought to life, so you definitely get a credit in his book. Brent Wolgamott, what about you?
I would probably have to say Princess Podcasting Queen, because I talk about this shit all day, just like I was telling you guys earlier. And I actually did go the extra mile for bonus credit and did my sidekick, and it was going to be the Terran Troll. It's this evil troll that follows me around, and people constantly ask me why he's single, and I just don't get it.
Now, does this Terran Troll look, I guess it's a combination of Sasha Velour's golem-like creature and the robot that Nina Bonina had.
Ugly is all get out. Like, you can't even put your eyes on it.
If I had to pick my persona, mine would probably be something like Thumb Blue Mina or something like that. I don't exactly know. I have a name, but maybe not a concept. And the sidekick would probably be some sort of weird anthropomorphic flower that goes full bloom. But enough about us. Let's talk about these drag queens in the third episode of this season of RuPaul's Drag Race. I feel like this is maybe the first authentic Drag Race episode of the season. As I said before, you know, the past 2 weeks can kind of function as their own two-part premiere. And I'm always reminded how much I love this show. I thought the challenge was super creative slash campy slash a little creepy at the same time. All the three C's were there. The queens really came out to slay. We'll talk about it, obviously, look by look, but I thought overall they really produced a fantastic body of work, and we arguably got rid of one of the queens who might have been suffering a little more in the competition overall than some others, leaving behind a very, very strong group overall. Really loving this cast, really loving this season. Brent, what'd you think about this episode?
Well, I loved this episode for the main challenge. I have to say that since it's moved to VH1, I think I speak for the majority of our audience when I say that I'm totally missing the mini challenge. Like, that to me is part of the real, like, life and blood of Drag Race, when they do these stupid little mini challenges at the beginning that just make you laugh your ass off. That being said, maybe they were thinking, well, this challenge is so screwed up from the beginning that we're going to get plenty of laughs from the runway. And I have to tell you that when Rue said, and you're going to make be a fairy tale princess, and you're going to be the sidekick, and you're going to play both of them, I didn't quite get what she was saying. I didn't understand what they were going to do. And when they came out on the runway, I was like, oh my God, am I on acid right now? This is so screwed up. What is this?
Yeah, it was very, I didn't understand really the concept either of like, so they've done, you know, competitions before. Like, for example, I'm thinking of the like wedding photo shoot where they played both the guy and the girl, and then they like photoshopped the pictures together. But this is going to be on the runway. So I don't know if you're going to have some like hologram nonsense or like what was going to happen. I didn't really quite understand it until like I actually saw it on the main stage.
Right.
Yeah. So segueing into the beginning of this episode, post James Mansfield elimination, we get some kind words for James and from James. I don't know how much we really talked about it, her goodbye message in particular last week, but I thought she had a very, very nice goodbye message, essentially be kind. And I guess saying that to both the queens and also those fans on social media out there, that these are queens. They're not just characters on television. We get a couple of breadcrumbs leading to this gingerbread house, speaking of fairy tales, that we're going to get at the end of this episode. In particular, Trinity is gunning for Valentina right out of the gate. Now, Liana, Trinity is going to have a very interesting edit this episode. Ultimately, she does prevail over Valentina. But what were your initial thoughts when you heard that she was coming for Valentina in those confessionals?
Well, I mean, I can't help but like put my editing goggles on. And I was like, all right, either she wins or she fails to Valentina. Like, there are two ways for this story to go. You know, she was like throwing some shade, like saying, oh, she's got a lot of confidence for only doing drag, you know, for such a short amount of time. And so there was a lot wrapped up kind of in their story, and whether or not this is just going to be like a one episode thing, or if we're going to continue to see them kind of battle for a top spot. I thought that was very interesting. But Trinity, like in general, I was really, really impressed with her this episode. And I felt like from a lot of our preseason coverage, we're kind of sleeping on her. And even in, you know, some of the first episodes. So I was really happy with her overall in this episode.
Yeah, I think that obviously, look, you know, we know that these confessionals are taped after the fact. I felt like that there was ironically less to the story than what they were giving us. And by that, I mean that from what we have seen so far, there wasn't anything between Valentina and Trinity. And from, you know, to hear Trinity tell, it's like, you know, this bitch won the first challenge, but I'm coming for her in this challenge. And I'm like, where is this coming from? So obviously there must be more to come in the Trinity versus Valentina battle. And for that matter, the Valentina versus a lot of people battle based on the Untucked edited version that we saw, because it seems like there are a few people who are jealous of how the judges view Valentina on the runway.
Yes, we will definitely talk about that, because, you know, Valentina definitely has had a kind career on RuPaul's Drag Race so far. She did not win the first challenge, but I think she was talked very favorably. She ended up winning the second challenge. And even though, again, it's debatable as to how long she's been in drag versus how long she's been doing drag professionally, I do feel like some of these queens are, whether from a place of jealousy, a place of competition, or a place of outright anger, in the case of Aja in Untucked, are sort of going after Valentina immediately. We're not in the state that we were in All Stars 2, where the queens eliminate each other. If we were, there might be a chance that Valentina could get targeted extremely early. But for right now, you know, she has her own skills to fly upon. Let's go the next day into the workroom. Rue comes in and reveals a rather interesting fact about the mannequin that is in, or the wax figure, I guess I should say, in the corner of Rue. Brent, what did you think about this reveal that I guess Big Brother or Big Rue is always watching in this case?
See, I thought that was just I just thought that was a skit. I didn't think that was real.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I thought that it was like, I couldn't tell. And first of all, I knew that the wax figure wasn't really following them around. Now, whether or not it had cameras inside, that's the part that I was like, well, I don't know. They're kind of making us think like that it does, but I can't really tell. So I don't know. I didn't know what the hell to make of this, Mike.
It was so weird. It was completely out of place. It made no sense. It had nothing to do with what actually ended up happening in the rest of the episode. Like, I watched it and I was just like, wait, what? Like, what the hell is going on?
Liana, it was the Lisa Kudrow. It was.
It was. They were like, oh, crap, we can't find anybody from Friends. What are we going to do?
So wait, so we don't get mini challenges. And instead, to fill that time, we're getting drive-by appearances from 90s sitcom stars and introductions of robotic devices that exist in the workroom. I do agree with you, Brent. This definitely, I think, is a joke. It's very tongue-in-cheek. They even put in like the Terminator-esque effect of, you know, the crosshairs.
Oh, I must have missed that. Okay, cool.
Each the queens. I mean, also, like, why are you going to say that there would be a camera in the wax figure, considering that there are cameras all around them?
That's like saying, oh my God, there's a hidden camera in the house on Big Brother. Oh my God.
We're being filmed? Oh my God.
Yeah, so though maybe, you know, someone like Kimora Black by the end of this might not hope that she was filmed, specifically with the things she might have been saying in confessional. So Rue announces that the maxi challenge for this week, create an original fairy tale princess, including a mythology, a fantasy frock, and a sassy sidekick. Now, the results aside, Liana, what did you think about this challenge in conception?
I mean, again, like what I said is because I didn't quite understand like what the end product was going to be, especially because we really didn't see that much of all of the sidekicks. We did with Trinity when Rue came to, you know, to talk to Trinity at her table. But I guess I was just a little confused. So, you know, I understood. I was like, okay, I was like trying to understand what this is. It's like, it's a sewing challenge. And then there's some element of humor to it. Like, you know, we've had queens create products and stuff before, but I didn't know if there was going to be a video or how they were going to end up selling it. So I guess I was just a little confused and along for the ride, but I thought all in all, it was I don't know, it's fine. There's so many queens still, but like I'm waiting for my lip sync challenge or, you know, like the acting challenge. Like those are the things that I really look for. I mean, this definitely felt more like an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, you know, with Ru coming around and talking to all the queens, and we kind of followed more of the traditional layout of the episode. But anyway, I don't know. It felt like almost a filler challenge kind of.
This to me felt like a episode one challenge where they have to make something and put something together. Although, to be fair, I don't know how many of the queens actually made something. I think a lot of the queens had pre-existing garments and they just bedazzled the hell out of it in order to put like things and stuff and starfish.
Kimora Black's giving side eye to that comment, Brett. These queens are too high and mighty to be able to stone those outfits.
I know, right? Well, I liked the challenge, but again, I didn't understand what was going on. I thought for a second, I thought, do they have puppets? Like, are we going the puppets route? Like, are they bringing somebody down the runway and then they're going to like do the voice for them as well? Like, I didn't
James
understand
Mansfield
what was
cut
going
too
on.
Soon.
Like, who knew that it, season 9 they were going to do green screen on RuPaul's Drag Race? Like, we have hit the future, Mike.
I know you made a joke about it, Liana, but I actually do wonder how James Mansfield would have done in this challenge, because she said last episode that, you know, she liked playing the character of James the drag queen because it sort of gives her a form of armor and someone else to play. That's literally what this challenge is. So I actually do kind of wonder how James would do and whether she would have done a little better than some of the queens here. And Brent, I want to ask you as well. I mean, you talked about it last episode. Those of you that may remember our coverage of Once Upon a Time on Post Show Recaps know that you're a big fan of Once Upon a Time and fairy tales. So having that knowledge of the most immediate fairy tale comparison on air to look to, were you expecting something big coming from these queens?
I was expecting something big coming from a few of these queens that I've grown to love. The person, and I know we'll get to it, but I'm going to bring her up right now, who absolutely gave me everything in this challenge, including more than RuPaul were herself. Freaking Michelle Visage. Can we talk about her? Oh my God. The evil queen look with the shoulder pads and the widow's peak. I mean, I literally thought I was watching Once Upon a Time, the pilot episode. I'm telling you, Mike, she was giving me that.
I'm pretty sure that Michelle Visage snuck into Lana Parrilla's closet and just like picked that outfit out and put it on.
Such an evil queen dress. I was living for that. And that was the thing. Like, we're jumping ahead. I felt like many, many, many of the queens, and the judges can do whatever the hell they want, but I felt like some of the queens ventured into evil queen territory that we're going to make a princess and not really drag princess. So we're going to clock a few of them on coming up here.
Well, let's talk about something that might be worth of some clocking on our part, which is as soon as the queens get to work on the challenge, we have a couple of people admitting that either they don't want to sew or they don't know how to sew. In the latter category, poor, sweet, beautiful little Pheromone does not sew. She only makes tote bags and pillows. Unfortunately, Princess Tote Bag did not make her way down the runway. But Liana, you are a seasoned fan of RuPaul's Drag Race. Is it the number one rule going in that you should know how to sew?
Just the basics. Maybe a little bit more than the tote bags and the pillows. But like, girl, you know that there is going to be a sewing challenge. Although, that being said, with some of the other queens who actually seem to have already had some of at least the base of their outfits beforehand and then kind of got away with it there, like, I don't know. I feel like maybe in recent seasons, it's been more acceptable to have queens that aren't so good at sewing, and then they just kind of deck up one of the outfits that they already have. But like, that was such a fundamental staple of like the early seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race. And that's why I really appreciate it. Like Charlie Hyde's being able to craft her outfit. Shea Coulee's outfit was absolutely gorgeous, wonderfully constructed. Like, I want to see that. And it's so frustrating to see these queens that don't know how to sew.
Oh, that was a really good Farrah there for
Thank
a
you.
Second.
I was practicing.
I was going to say, like, can we all do the Farrah voice? Like, oh, my God. Oh,
yes, so putting the moan in Farrah moan this week. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with Liana. I don't know why they don't take away all their drag. Like, they really should. They should. They should take away all of their drag. They should have to use the fabrics on the wall and put something together. And then we'll see who's the tops and the bottoms. And you know I like some tops. So there you go.
And it's interesting, again, going back to the editing choices that the show makes, to have Aja actually vocalize that and throw shade towards Farrah it's ironic because Aja's going to end up in the bottom two, whereas Farrah does not. She's only in the bottom three. But you almost feel like Aja is representing the producers in that moment to say to future queens, for the last time, know how to sew at least a little bit. Scrape by. And it's interesting, in the pit stop this week with Raja and Delta Work, I believe Delta said, you know, even if you can't sew, fake it till you make it. Don't grouse about the fact that you can't. And we'll probably talk about Farrah's meltdown in a little bit. Right now, we're sort of in the denial stage, and we'll turn to anger soon enough.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, even if you can't sew, don't advertise the fact that you can't sew. Just like, you know, take the challenge as it comes, do your best, put some good product out there, and no one will probably say anything.
Like, hot glue the shit out of something.
Yeah.
Like, don't be afraid to hot glue. You're a drag queen. Thank you, Eureka.
Eureka got some good screen time. You know, everyone has been saying she's the bitch. There was that famous scene in Untucked where Charlie said, you know, can you shut up now? It's like the face cracker of the century. I must have rewinded that moment like about 10 times. But there was some really good work from Eureka in this episode, like showing a nice little moment with Farrah. I liked that.
So the other person who is struggling a little bit with this challenge from the get-go is Kimora Black. Not only from a design perspective, but from a linguistic perspective. Kimora needs to go back to Schoolhouse Rock and unpack her adjectives a bit. Brent, what did you think about Kimora in this moment?
Are we really going to spend any time on this? Like, I'm clocking Mike Bloom. I'm like, what the f-? What the? Okay, fine. I'll talk about it. Like, the show made a big deal about it, but I felt like she was playing this up. Like, I mean, you seriously don't know what an adjective is? You dumb bitch. Like, seriously, you don't know what an adjective is? How the hell are you on this show? I'm sorry. I was over. I thought she was playing it for the cameras. I felt like she likes the sort of, I'm just pretty and I'm not very smart. I think that's what her thing is, and she really lives for that. So I couldn't tell what was reality and what was fake there, Mike.
Liana, how does this compare to other faux pas of Drag Race past? I mean, the two that come to mind immediately are associated with the same person, Roxy Andrews, with both the sequined versus sequenced and the Shaw versus Sash.
That was different.
At least I'm sure Roxy knows what an adjective is. Like, she'll be like, yeah, sequins are shiny. I don't know how to say sequins, but I know that they're shiny because it's a super adjective. Thank you, Kimora. Oh, my goodness. Yes. It was hilarious. I don't know. I didn't care. I was living for it. And then, oh, my gosh, for her episode, Kimora had so many great lines. Like, this is not America's Next Top Sweatshop.
I know, right? And when she's talking with Cynthia, and she's like, so is your cuckoo like the hole, or? And then she's like, so do I have a cuckoo? And Cynthia's like, no, you have a cuckoo. Like, what is this?
And that's, again, I'll repeat what I said last week. I mean, we're going to eulogize Kimora Black later on, but as much as she might not necessarily be adept for RuPaul's Drag Race in general, which does not, she's still a great drag queen, but Drag Race just might not be for her. She makes fantastic TV, exactly. Specifically with those confessionals. And we'll definitely, I loved when Cynthia's telling her the story about the cuckoo, and Cynthia's like, and then my mama, she hit me with a chocolate. And you just see this look on Kimora's face, like, I don't know what she's talking about. Come on, English lessons from Cynthia, as well as
a
fantastic
come on, English lessons. I was dying for that.
Such a good... Another note from this this first workday period. Aja, extremely confident coming in. She feels like she's got this on lock. She says she sews 95% of her outfits. Brent, as a reality TV fan, was she being built up for a fall at this moment?
Well, I knew she was going to be end up in the bottom, or she was going to be the winner. I mean, because RuPaul's Drag Race is not very subtle with their editing. I mean, they have so many queens right now, so they're going to show you what you need to know going into the main challenge. And I'm not, you know, there was no way she was safe. Okay, no way in the world. She was definitely going to be out there for criticism one way or the other. It was only a matter of, did she succeed or did she not? Is she full of herself? I wrote down in my notes something that I said, when will the talent catch up with the confidence? Because people keep saying, oh my God, Aja, she's the biggest thing in Brooklyn, and people are talking about her, and she has all this confidence, and she walks around like, you know, and I got this from Cezanne, and this is, I got this in New York, and, you know, I'm living for this and my makeup, and I sew everything. But where is the talent? Where is the drag? I don't see it yet, because we're going to get to that outfit, that wig, that hairline. Girl, please stop. Like, turn down the confidence just a notch. I felt like the editing was telling us that she was going to be in the bottom, but I thought there was a sliver of a chance that she could succeed.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see her story arc and how it progresses and how long, you know, she is going to end up staying in the competition. Because like what we saw with the lip sync for your life, like the girl can perform. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, that's not going to be enough anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see like kind of how this the fallout of everything and how it ends up ending for her.
One more quick thing about this first day, as again, another thing that sort of made this a bona fide episode of RuPaul's Drag Race for me. We finally got the walkthroughs here with RuPaul. We did not get a mini challenge, but we at least have that for us to sup on a bit. But we get the reveal that Valentina has been doing a little bit of brow work. Mike Block asked me, Valentina's brows, talk amongst yourselves. Liana, do you have any thoughts about Valentina's endeavor to shave part of her eyebrows?
So this, I mean, this is part of the, okay, well, maybe she hasn't been doing drag for that long. She's like, this is the first time shaving my eyebrows. And then I was like, are we going to see them? And then Ru's like, I want to see your eyes. And then she does the little like peekaboo reveal with her tiny little eyebrows, but they're still so bushy. Like they were tiny little caterpillars, like not big ones, but like real tiny ones.
Brent, what did you think about Valentina's brows?
Well, I mean, I didn't know what she was going for, but I remember when I did drag a long time ago that I at first you kind of shave off half your eyebrow because you feel like you can get away with it while I can still look like a boy. And then you're just like, ah, to hell with it. And you just shave the whole damn thing off. So I think that's where that Valentina is at this point. By the way, and I can't remember, you know, I talk with so many people and I read so many things about RuPaul's Drag Race. I don't know if we said this, but she has been performing for 10 months. She has been doing drag for a lot longer. Mm-hmm. So do not be mistaken here, people, for thinking, you know, that she came out of nowhere and is a baby drag queen and has only been working for 10 months. She has been a drag queen for like 2 or 3, 4 years. She's been dressing up in drag. She's only been performing on stage for 10 months. So that's the tea.
That makes sense.
Yes, that's the key difference. So again, you know, you'd have to wonder if she's been performing for so long. Why did she? It's interesting that, you know, she was not able to. She obviously shaved her eyebrows, but she wasn't able to do something with them in time for Ru to come around. Totally understandable considering that she had an entire outfit to work on, plus mythology, plus a sidekick, but still made for a fun moment and really funny moment where Valentina said, you know, I kept part of it in because, you know, if I shaved all of it off, I don't want to look weird. And then Ru's like, why are you looking at me when you said that? So one of the reasons why RuPaul is one of the best hosts on TV, in my opinion. Really, really love that moment.
Oh my gosh. That interaction too, when she was telling, like describing, oh, my princess is from Azula. And then Ru was like, not Azusa. And then all I could think about was freaking
Adore Delano.
Adore Delano. And I was like, the difference between the two of them. Oh my gosh. I was just laughing so hard because, you know, freaking Adore is like, I'm from Azusa. I will cut a bitch. And then you've got cute little Valentina being like, I don't want to show you my eyebrows.
Yes, it's quite the yin yang of Adore Delano and Valentina. Can make for a great YouTube show one day. Let's jump into the next day. We talked about Brent, you know, elaborated on this last week, but we did get some straight from the queen's mouth what cuckoo means, and really fun story. Not that much from Cynthia Lee Fontaine this week, so we at least got a little bit of that. We had some shade thrown towards the social media queens in the form of, you know, asking Aja if she doesn't have this face tone.
It's called Facetune. It's a filter you can use to, you know, make your pictures. It's basically like Photoshop for iPhones, what it is, Mike. And a lot of drag queens on social media use it. Aja uses it a lot, but a lot of queens use it. In fact, I don't know a drag queen on social media who regularly posts pictures who doesn't use Facetune. I almost said it Facetune as well. Facetone as well. So the point being that this was the part in the episode where I thought was really forced, because I can't remember who it was. Was it Trinity or was it Shay who went around and said, so, Kimora, you were in the bottom two last week. So, Aja, how do you think you're going to succeed now that you don't have Facetune to use as a filter? I mean, like, it was very like, okay, obviously you must be done with your project. And the producer said, go up and ask that bitch a question. That's what we want to hear.
I know Alexis Michelle did a little bit, but Shea Coulee was the one who's like going around to everybody. And I was like, is Shea filling in for Ru? Like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, you never know with those moments, because the questions do sort of seem to come up at the mirror sort of out of nowhere. Maybe they're prompted along. We're not entirely sure, but
I felt like this was foreshadowing. This was the editors telling us this bitch is going to fall flat on her face because she has way too much confidence. She thinks she's amazing because she got some followers on social media and they all say, yes, queen, slay, we love you, blah, blah, blah. But when your ass hits the runway with the harsh TV lights and HD cameras, you don't look so cute then, do you?
Yeah, especially with her makeup. Like,
and if she falls flat in her face on the runway, she doesn't have any face tune to put a filter over it, so the bruises show less. So more about Aja in a bit. But one of the reasons why I really enjoyed the mirror talk this episode is because they did bring up the tragedy that happened in Orlando last June. And I know we got questions after our first episode, and I'm sure we had questions amongst ourselves, even though we didn't bring it up in our podcast. Trinity Taylor, from Orlando, frequenter of Pulse, actually won Miss Pulse beforehand, was supposed to perform the week before the tragedy happened. It's interesting that in her hometown memorabilia outfit, she chose not to acknowledge it. I know the show was filmed in, I think, like August/September/October, so it obviously it only happened a few months ago. But we see things both from her perspective and Cynthia's as well in terms of how close they both came to being in the club during that night. Liana, what did you think about this segment?
I thought it was good. I mean, you know, the thing about RuPaul's Drag Race that I love is like how goofy and campy it is, but they're not afraid to shy away from, you know, talking about this. And then, you know, not only do we have both Trinity and Cynthia sharing their stories, you know, but then we have the queens like coming on later saying like, look, we have to support each other and love each other and like be out and be proud. And, you know, it's kind of this like this uplifting moment that can come from a tragedy like the Pulse, you know, Orlando shooting. So I really applaud the RuPaul's Drag Race like editors and producers were willing to put in something like this.
Mike, can I throw some shade at my co-host for a second? I just want to repeat that sentence. So they're not afraid to shy away from showing this. So are they showing this or
come on, English lessons.
Come on, English lessons.
A noun is a person, place, or a thing.
Oh my God. Like, well, I've done that before and I just keep on talking. I'm like, oh, please don't. I hope nobody acknowledges.
Please, no one notice. Very busy. Thank you very much.
No, but I had like, it was my first time. I'm like, oh my God, I can throw some shade at Liana. This is
so cool. Oh my God. Anyway, the point was.
Yes, the point.
I liked the segment and I'm happy that they included it.
All right. Well, I liked it, but I like my Drag Race really fun and popcorn and candy. And I guess this is fine. I know they had to acknowledge it, but I feel like I speak for most of the viewers. And like, we go to RuPaul's Drag Race to get away from the bullshit on television. Like, I don't want to hear about stuff like this. And I know we have to hear about it. I know they were going to acknowledge it at some point. I'm just giving you my honest opinion here that I was glad that they acknowledged it. They talked about it for a few moments and then they moved on, because I like my RuPaul's Drag Race when it's fun and happy. And that's why I go to that place, because the world's tough enough as it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think you're certainly entitled to your opinion in that regard, and that I think Drag Race does serve as a form of escapism. And I think, you know, even Sasha, I think, pointed out in this episode that drag can sort of serve as a way to work through those feelings in its own regard.
Yeah, therapy. Yeah.
I will say, though, that I think this segment is important because I think that obviously RuPaul's Drag Race is broadcast nationwide. And sometimes drag is a medium that's affiliated with more, you know, big city settings. And there might be some viewers out there in Middle America, for example, that might obviously know what had happened, but did not realize the profound effect that it had on the drag and the gay community. And so to have people that you watch on TV actually vocalizing those things, I think is very important to sort of weigh in. Again, this happened, you know, almost a year ago at the time that they're airing this, but I think it's an obviously extremely emotional and extremely weighty situation. And I think that these queens serve as almost great representatives, both from being directly involved, indirectly involved, or just part of the community, to sort of vocalize exactly what happened on that day and how they need to unite as a community and stand together in the face of it. So I was happy that they included it. I can agree that, you know, it was somewhat of a tonal whiplash, especially compared to how over the top and campy and lovable the rest of this episode is. But I'm so glad that they acknowledged it, because They're great spokespeople, I feel like, for this.
I mean, that's a good point. And I did not consider for a moment that, you know, we're not on Logo anymore. We're on VH1, which is seen by a lot of more people and a lot more straight people, to be honest, and a lot of people who don't pay attention to what happens in the drag community. So that's a good point.
All right, let's move to the runway here. And we've got two guests this week. First, let's bring in something old in the form of returning former guest judge for RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 2, Todrick Hall. Now, it is no Alyssa secret that during our coverage of All-Stars 2, myself, Brent, Ali Lasher, pretty much everyone we had on this podcast was not a big fan of Todrick as a guest judge. Liana, how did Todrick do in comparison this episode?
My favorite part was all of Todrick's criticism was like, so Rue and Michelle have said this on the show before. And then he repeats like what they've said. Like, you can't come out here with a piece of fabric tied around your waist. I'm not a seamstress, but that looks like a piece of fabric tied around your waist. So in classic Todrick fashion, he was kind of there.
Yeah, I thought he was better this episode. I liked that he actually had some good criticisms. I think it helped that these were not all stars. These were new queens. He didn't have any respect. And I don't want to say he didn't have any respect, but he basically didn't know any of these queens ahead of time. It wasn't like all stars where, you know, we're like, well, I don't want to criticize Adore. Well, I don't want to criticize, you know, Alaska. Cause I've worked with her before. I know her, you know, I've seen her, I've met her at parties, you know, I mean, these queens you don't know from Jesus. So it's a lot easier to give a head to toe criticism.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I agree both in the frame that he did do a better job than he did in All-Stars 2, which granted, it's a little bit of a low bar to clear, but he did have, you know, strictly from a humor-based scale, he had that nice little dig at Michelle as well, and he only had really a couple of barbs that he threw out throughout the course of those 8 episodes of All-Stars 2. And yeah, maybe he felt like he was able to bring the claws out a little more, like you said, Brent, because, you know, these are not well-known queens that both the audience and the judges come in with preconceived notions and preconceived relationships. He was sort of able to come in from a more of a critical eye. Plus, he looked really good in that prince outfit as well, fitting for, you know, whatever version of Cinderella he may do. I actually do believe he did a version of Cinderella for one of his YouTube videos, but someone can fact check me on that. Our other guest judge for this week, the one and only Cheyenne Jackson. Liana, were you knowledgeable of the work of Cheyenne Jackson coming into this episode?
Okay, I spent the entire episode, well, the part where we were on the main stage, I was like, okay, I know this guy. What do I know him from? And instead of just doing an IMDb search because I'm lazy, I was just stared at him every single time he was on stage. And the only thing I could identify him from was he was on 30 Rock, right?
Yeah, he was Danny. Danny, the okay. Former street actor who came on in like the 4th season, had like a few episodes and then got shifted to the back.
Canadian. Yes, that's all I knew him from. But I remember thinking he was very handsome and was a little sad when I found out he was gay.
Oh, no. serving butch queen since 75. And by the way, I was also born in 75. So me and Cheyenne Jackson are basically like besties, just so you guys know. Cheyenne Jackson, I loved him this episode. He was great. He knew what show he was on. And by the way, I have followed Cheyenne Jackson since the beginning of his career when he was the lead on Broadway in All Shook Up. Mm-hmm. And it was so great back then because I can't even remember what year it was. I want to say it was like in the 90s, but it was like early 2000. It was really early. I'd have to go back and look to see when All Shook Up was on Broadway. But he was an out leading man. That I know people think, oh, on Broadway, you know, that happens all the time. When you're an up and comer and you think you might segue to movies or television, you were not out back then. So for Cheyenne Jackson to be that handsome and to be blunt, that butch, and to be that out, it was so great to see all the way back then when he was in All Shook Up. And I have followed his career all the way till now. And besides that little social media scandal we won't talk about, but besides that, he was great on this episode.
Yeah, he has always been one of my musical theater man crushes. I mean, his yes. voice is just like Velveeta. It is so smooth. And yeah, ever since, as you mentioned, All Shook Up, basically in like the mid 2000s, he's been able to take a few leading roles. He was one of the leads in Xanadu, which is like a really fun
yes.
romp.
Yes. Oh, yes. The short shorts, Mike. The short shorts.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Short shorts and the roller skates and the headbands. He made the sweatbands work.
Liana, like, if you haven't seen Cheyenne Jackson in Xanadu, like, I will get you a picture because he's in these jean short shorts with roller skates on. And his legs are, they look like they could choke a bear. They're absolutely amazing. Oh my God.
Yeah. I need to see this.
But he also showed in this episode, as you said, that like he's a great personality too. And I think he really, if we're comparing the two theatrical presences that were on this episode, I think Cheyenne really leapt off the screen. He didn't even need to wear, you know, any sort of fairy tale garb. He just sort of wore his very nice looking suit and just was able to make the, maybe it was for the Sean Connery joke that he had planned or something, but he was able to make a lot of pointed criticisms, which I think was really nice. So hopefully he comes back in greater regards. Let's do it, gang. Let's break down these queens look by look, both their fairy tale persona and their 2D, 3D head CGI sidekicks on the runway. Let's start with Cynthia Lee Fontaine and Princess Cuculina. Bren, what did you think about Princess Cuculina and her bunny sidekick?
Wow. You know, it's I'm looking at my notes, and the thing that I have in big fat letters underlined three times is fit. Where is the fit? Is there a fit to this garment? This looked like something that she had worn maybe like 3 years ago when she was 30 pounds heavier. I mean, oh my God. I thought this is something I noticed last week, and I didn't say anything about it because I was like, well, I couldn't tell if she was padding or not. This bitch needs to pad more. I don't know if she is padding, but she's not. If she is, she still looks like a damn stick. She looks like a pole. Oh my God. I don't understand why she's doing this. She must have done this on her previous season, and I didn't really notice it as much, but I'm really noticing it now because she's wearing these full-length gowns all the way to the floor. She's got no boobs. She's got no ass. She's got no hips. I mean, it's just like a stick. Are you guys with me on this? And the fabric, I can see, does not fit her body well. If you're going to wear something like that is clinging to your body, please make sure it fits. And it does not fit. The only thing that I liked about this was the sidekick. I couldn't remember what I was going to say. The sidekick, I thought that was pretty funny. It made me laugh. But and then even regards into the gown, like the whole thing looked like it was a previously done gown. And then she put this shoulder piece on top of it and bedazzled the hell out of it. Like that's it. I wasn't impressed by this at all. In fact, I thought this could conceivably end up in the bottom three.
Liana, were you as unimpressed?
Well, OK, so in general, for a lot of these princess looks, for a lot of them, I didn't quite get like their origin story. Like I don't know, I didn't get a good sense of like this is a fully developed character. And Cynthia Lee Fontaine was one of the ones that I didn't feel that there was. I mean, she had, okay, she was Princess Cuculina, right? Okay, obviously it's playoff of cuckoo. Okay, we get it, girl. But then I was like, well, what else is there to this character, right? It was that kind of like generic, just like pink gown with the shoulder arm thing. I did like the ball on top of her head. But again, like how did that fit in with her princess character? I'm just not quite sure.
I will disagree that I think we're definitely going to be talking about a good group of queens that I feel like did deliver on creating a character, maybe not necessarily creating a good narrative, but at least creating something fun. I actually think this is one of the challenges where I could conceivably see a combination of any six or seven queens end up in the top, for my opinion, but we'll put a bobby pin in that.
Yeah, Cynthia, yes, I agree with that.
Cynthia was not fantastic this episode. I did like the, I don't know if this was a nod to LaShawn Beyond from that zombie apocalypse challenge in season 4, but the, you know, the big sphere on the top of her head was definitely something new with the headpiece, something different than from what Cynthia would usually do. And I think the color of the gown stood out. And as you said, Brent, I thought, you know, the sidekick was a lot of fun. I was a little taken back at first because again, we really did not know what this sidekick's concept was going to yeah. look like.
Right.
To see, you know, I was thinking it was like, if you guys remember like Zoolander, when Derek Zoolander gets hypnotized and you have Will Ferrell as Mugatu as like little Cletus, and there's like that 2D background with all the little animals, like that's what came to mind for me. It was super weird, but I actually kind of liked it at the same time, especially with some of these other sidekicks that we'll talk about. I think starting out, it wasn't great, but I don't know if she, I think this was one of those challenges where it was a clear bottom three and everyone else did pretty well to at least really well.
Yeah, I would have replaced Aja with Cynthia, actually. I really did not like Cynthia's look at all. And I felt like Aja was at least really trying to think outside the box, even though it was busted and it looked awful. But I felt like Cynthia was really phoning it in.
All right, well, let's move on to our second queen, Peppermint as Princess Carcinogeta and Petey the Pilot Light, which seems to be a favorite of Todrick Hall's. Liana, your girl Peppermint, finally bringing it out. It puts her in the top. What'd you think of Peppermint this week?
I was very happy with her this episode. I thought that, I know I just said this, that there were some queens who didn't really have like a full concept and like a narrative. I thought that hers was one of the more well thought out and like detail oriented, which is something that she's gotten clocked for before, pieces of the night. I loved the name. Like, it wasn't just like Princess Fire. Like, she went with the Carcinogenetta, which was really like, I liked that. It was a little hard for her to say, so maybe that was a problem. But overall, I liked the name. I loved her outfit, that like high waisted, like mermaid skirt, like with the gold, like bustier. And then she had the fire train coming out the back with the fire neck piece. And she had the staff. Like, I felt that she was a real princess.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have in big full letters on my notes, staff. Like, if she doesn't have this staff, I think this is a fail. I really do. Or at least it's probably just safe. But when you come out with a big staff like that, to me, that's what takes it from drag to fairy tale land. Mm-hmm. I love the villain, or the sidekick, rather, reminded me of the villain in Hercules, or like it reminded me of Hercules above Hades himself with the hair, you know?
That's
when I was watching that. Everything about this I really liked. I was glad to see that Rue gave her some props. I thought there were a few other people that could have ended up in the top. Peppermint was definitely one of my favorites, but I thought there were a couple other people who did just a little bit better, but she made it into top three, so good for her.
Yeah, and Rue didn't need to give her props. She had one of her own, as you were just talking about with the staff. Yeah, and I think I can't say enough about how creative Petey the Pilot Light was. I mean, this really gave queens open rein to say, do whatever you want. And almost all of them went with, you know, magical creatures,
right,
or animals. Whereas Peppermint was like, okay, let me take... It's really interesting that she had a story, not just a story in terms of a narrative, but an action.
Stop. I'm gonna clock you about the story, Mike, because that I felt like it didn't. Come on, you guys joined me in this, right? That was total bullshit, right? Oh my god! Like, when I was younger and I would like I had the stove on and everything started to burn up, and so since then I've been deathly afraid of fire, and so I decided to make something that really brought out my fear of fire and helped me work through it. Like, girl, please, like, stop! Like, I mean, were you really buying that?
She was speaking very casually about her house burning down for somebody whose house.
Exactly.
Burn down.
Give me a break, Mike.
We
Stop.
All
Mike,
work through our grief gullible. In different ways.
Yeah, see, this is where, like, the straight boy who's watching, that being you, Mike, she's able to sell you on this. You're like, oh, that's so nice. How cute. And, like, meanwhile, Leon and I are back here going, can you believe this bitch talking about this? Like,
it's my straight boy goggles, I have to admit. I guess
exactly.
I have them on at the moment. But, yeah, I was taken by her story, whether it's falsified or not. I have to admire the fact that I think, you know, we were all very high on her coming into this season. She has been fine. As I said, she was coasting on good the past 2 weeks, but here I feel like she really delivered her first knockout of the season. I thought her outfit, especially paired with the fire aspect, really popped out as well. Does it necessarily scream princess? No, but it's a different take on a princess, which is sort of what I think Todrick will attribute to, I can't remember now, but one of the other queens in the tops and the bottoms.
The other thing I will say really quickly is that this to me felt like it was old school drag. Like, it didn't feel like it was in a modern take, like your Sasha Velours or your Valentinas. Like, this felt to me like something that you would have seen in a drag club in like 1995, and I was living for that because it was done so well.
All right, let's move on to someone who maybe did not do so well. In fact, she ended up in the bottom three. Miss Pheromone as Princess Pacifica and the interesting character of Bublina the Blowfish. Liana, did Bublina and Pharah blow you over?
Oh, Pharah. She's just so... I think this was a quote from the very first episode. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like, she's like a lost little puppy dog.
Yeah.
And that's how she felt when she came out. I mean, she first comes out, she looks absolutely... I mean, she is gorgeous. But then as soon as she was out there with Bublina the Blowfish, and she... Oh my gosh, she was horrible at Bublina the Blowfish. That was like the closed eyes that were supposed to look like open eyes, like clearly reading from a script, didn't embody any type of character, really looked like she was just reading something.
Yeah, Mike, this was like... Ariel from The Little Mermaid. That's all this was, because it was Ariel and it was Blubber, you know, with like the little yellow blowfish.
Flounder.
Flounder.
Sorry, but I screwed it up. But whatever. It's The Little Mermaid. That's what it is. She's trying to do that, and just saying that she's not doing that. But I wasn't buying any of this. This just felt like I really just, anytime you hear a queen say, I just want to be safe. I just want to get through the challenge. I just want to be safe. Girl, pencil them in for the bottom three because they're not going to be safe.
Yeah, I mean, what I will say is that, as always, she looked gorgeous. So I guess in that regard, she earns pretty good marks. I mean, I think she's been untucked.
She could come out in a trash bag and look gorgeous. By the way, I'm asking for this for my own edification at the moment. Is there a blubber in The Little Mermaid at all?
I'm pretty sure there's not. Maybe. Okay. I don't know if there's a little version of Little Mermaid that you've seen that has a character called Blubber.
Okay, yes, that's what it is.
That's the X-rated version.
Yeah, oh boy. Let's stay away from that fishiness and talk about some more fishy queens here. But I mean, Farrah does say in Untucked that she, at least according to her words, thought the judges liked what was going on from the waist up, which essentially, as you said, Brett, pretty much was nothing. It was a bra and a blue wig with starfish in it. I mean, this was very basic. This reminded me, you know, they talked last week about how James is season one of RuPaul's Drag Race, everyone else is season nine. This felt a little like season one, two, three of doing like an aquatic theme, at least compared to someone like Trinity, who took the aquatic theme and really ran the table with it. Farrah kind of pales in comparison. And yeah, Bublina, I mean, she even admits that when you look at her at first, you're thinking like, okay, are her eyes supposed to be closed? Is this the blind blowfish? What's going on with this character? And then we find out later from Carson's critique that, yeah, I guess she had like a set of cue cards at her waist or something. So when she was filming, she was looking down the entire time. The voice was a little strange. It was a little stilted. It was definitely one of the weaker sidekicks overall. It doesn't help that it was a fish, so it was literally just a floating head in the middle of the runway, which was strange enough on its own. I mean, I do want to ask, Farrah's going to end up in the bottom three, but not the bottom two. Brent, do you feel like that was the right decision on the judges' part?
Of course not. Come on, we know what's going on here. Y'all know what's going on here, right? Okay. Rue wanted to make sure Rue knew what the song was, Holding Out for a Hero, a drag anthem to end all drag anthems. The last lip sync was a little bit lackluster, okay? She wanted to make sure that Kimora was knocked out. She needed a drag assassin to get rid of her. And you know, if you put Farrah out there with Kimora, it was going to be a snooze fest. She knew she needed someone to take out Kimora because she was through with her. Aja was the girl to do it. You see that Aja is a performer. I'm putting on my tinfoil hat. That's exactly what was going on here. There was no universe ever that Farrah was not in the bottom two. You saw how the queens reacted when Rue announced that she was safe and that it was Aja in the bottom two. There was some shenanigans going on here. Rue wanted to get the outcome that Rue wanted to get, and Rue got it.
Leon, are you co-opting that tinfoil hat?
Yeah, 100%. I also will go all in on this conspiracy theory because... I mean, really, like, look at Pheromone's outfit. Like, this is worse than Derek Barry. Like, you literally just wrap some fabric around you. And so how you are not in the bottom two, like, I genuinely don't understand. But that being said, Aja, you knew was going to kill it. Oh, my gosh. Holding Out for a Hero. Like, she was 100% going to rock this and send Kimora home. And that's exactly what Rue wanted.
Yeah, I do wonder what Pheromone's Holding Out for a Hero would have been like.
I don't even want to know.
No.
I do wonder, I can definitely buy into the theory that you're presenting, Brent, but I wonder if we're also sort of comparing, like, I feel like Farrah was boring, but to live up to her name, Aja was sort of a disaster in that regard. And you have to wonder, were the judges more so punishing someone who was run of the mill or someone who ended up being a hot mess, quite literally?
No, Mike, you know what would have happened if Farrah would have come out here with Kimora and did the lip sync? There was a chance that Farrah could have obviously lost the lip sync, and Rue did not want that to happen. She knew if she put Aja out there, and I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but she knew if she put Aja out there with Kimora, that there was no way, I'll put it this way, there was no way that it was going to be an obvious win for Kimora with Aja out there performing. You know what I'm saying? With Farrah out there, anything could happen. I mean, it could be something where Rue's hands were tied and had to send Farrah home. So she didn't want that to happen. She wanted to make sure she got rid of Kimora, and because she was through with her at this point. This is the second challenge in a row where she just looked awful and mailed it in and bitching about everything here and there. So I firmly believe that that's what happened. I do not in any universe think that in Rue's head, she actually thought that Farrah was safe. I think Rue knew that Farrah was awful and terrible and should be in the bottom two. But I also think Rue wanted to do a little bit of face cracking and let these queens know, bitch, I'm in charge, not you. So I love the fact that all the queens like gay gassed for a moment when she announced that Aja was in the bottom two, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, there was an interesting interview with Aja and Sasha for, I forget the name of the magazine, but coming up to this week's episode saying like, oh, coming up for this episode, you know, we were all shocked and you have to wonder exactly what that meant. I was fearing for Valentina a little bit coming into that episode as a result, but maybe Rue's also, again, speaking towards the meta aspects, as you said, sort of sending a signal to the rest of the queens saying like, hey, Aja didn't get eliminated, but none of you are safe.
None I wouldn't say that Aja... Safe. Yeah.
Aja, I don't know if Aja was considering like a front runner, quote unquote, up to this point, but I think she was one of the more reputable queens from her Brooklyn career. And as a result, people were saying, oh, yeah, she's going to do well in the competition. To see her fall to the bottom so quickly, I think opens up a lot of people's eyes, except for maybe Bablina the Blowfish, in that, you know, you should not rest on your laurels whatsoever. You know, if you have a bad day, there's a chance you could end up here in the bottom. Though I do think if Pheromone, the only way I feel like she might have lost that lip sync is if she didn't know any of the words to Holding Out for a Hero. We're gonna have a lot of shade thrown towards Kimora Black in the lip sync, I'm assuming.
Yeah, well, I mean, but again, we don't know what would happen with Pharah, and she, again, they knew that Aja would read the house down, and she did.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move on to Charlie Hides as Princess Climaxica and her sidekick Isabella Snatchpacker, looking like the Great Gazoo's crazy aunt or something. Liana, what did you think about Charlie this week?
I thought Charlie was hilarious. I mean, I think this is some of the humor that I have been waiting to see because, you know, the challenges that we've had so far, she really hasn't been able to express that. But just, oh my gosh, there was one line from Isabella Snatchpacker that was, she loves foreign tongue. She's a cunning linguist. You know, I lost it. I was like, yay, this is what Drag Race is all about. I want to see more of this. But then when it came to her outfit too, I thought it was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, she looked like she looked like a queen. She didn't look like a princess. That like fully gold gown, the multiple like tiers in the lower half, over the one shoulder, the bust line, everything. Her staff, I know, sucker for the props. So Rue didn't need to give any props, even though she should have given her more props.
Yeah, that was not a staff. That was a stick.
Okay, it was better than whatever stick Alexis Michelle was holding. Anyway.
She was holding a literal stick.
Yeah,
I know. Exactly. It's an effing stick. But the things that were like sticking out of her hair, like I liked that. I don't know. I thought she was very gorgeous, very pretty. And I thought she deserved more credit in this challenge.
Really? Mm-hmm. I kind of didn't think so. I thought it was a little boring, actually. I really did. It was kind of like a basic copper dress that was crumpled over the shoulder. It was reading a little bit more fairy godmother to me than actual drag princess.
Shade on her age, girl.
Well, that's how it was reading. I'm sorry. Look, if I can clock Valentina for occasionally looking like a 20-year-old who became a 40-year-old, or Alexis Michelle as a 30-year-old who becomes a 50-year-old, I can clock Charlie Hyatt for being a 50-year-old who looks like a 60-year-old. I mean, that's how it looked to me. And so I felt like that, I think I could have looked past all of that, but I do feel like this is one area where maybe what Peppermint was talking about in the first episode rings true, because even though her humor wasn't like over the line, it was very British with the whole Climaxica and Princess Snatchpacker, and it was very like affected. And if you're not into that sort of thing on Drag Race, then it's just not going to read well to you. And I found myself a bit bored. I felt like she was amusing herself with her words there.
I'm totally in Liana's camp. I thought Charlie did great in that I think she was able to combine, you know, the gorgeous look that she's been able to provide the past couple weeks with the runway. And Ross sort of was a harbinger of this look last week when he said, you know, make sure you're unpacking personality as well. And I feel like through Isabella Snatchpacker, humor's totally subjective, so I can understand where you're coming from, Brent, in that, you know, it might either be a little, it's towing the line, and at the same time, it might become derivative to a certain perspective. But I'm happy that she's able to at least show some humor that you talked about that you lavished on in the carpool video back in the day. So I'm happy that we're at least seeing a new side of Charlie Hyde on the runway, and that makes me hopeful for what she'll bring for the rest of the season, hopefully.
Well, here's the other thing I will say about Charlie. Like, I understand, Bert, where you're coming from, that it was, like, relatively simple, especially compared to some of the other queens looks, but at least she didn't freaking, like, stone the shit out of it or just glue pom-poms to it, which apparently, which is all the other queens did. I don't know where all those like little pom, you know what I'm talking about? Those like little craft pom-poms, the tiny mm-hmm. ones that are like fuzzy. I swear to God, every queen had a bunch like glued on her somewhere. And so I just wanted to rip them all off. And I thought it was better that it was simple instead of like overly bedazzled.
Well, speaking of gluing things on somebody, let's talk about someone who had cockroaches and mice and trash glued all over her. Eureka's look this week, Princess Eureka of Daria and Roof Trade, her dog sidekick. Brim, what'd you think of Eureka this week?
Oh my God. I mean, like, I wanted to like this, and she was definitely serving it to me on the runway, but this is one of those instances, and I feel like a few other queens did this as well, where she had a previously planned outfit that she wanted to use. And she heard the challenge and she was like, okay, I'm gonna force fit this outfit into the challenge and I'm gonna turn it into what I wanna make it and I'm gonna call it something and it's gonna win. And there was no universe that this was gonna win. I just felt like it was very Ursula. It was very like villain, Disney villain-esque. It was never drag princess to me. What part of this is princess? You can say, well, I'm going to be grunge. I'm going to be sewer. But it still needs to read as princess in some way. And I just never got that. It felt very drag queen to me. It felt very like pageant-y to me. But it was never, ever drag princess.
It was a black swimsuit with a train and a bejeweled corset. That's what it was.
Yeah, and a Cheeto hair. The Cheeto fire hair. That hair is going to be back for a long time. I can't wait until they clock her for it.
Okay, because I was like just enamored by the fact that she was going to do something outside of the box and like do this sewer princess look, I kind of almost just ignored her outfit. Like the first time I watched the episode, I didn't even remember what she was wearing because I was just thinking about her concept and like the persona that she was trying to put on. In retrospect, yeah, the outfit was, I thought, she should have gotten clocked for it. But I did like, you know, she's kicked out of Topland. Like, that was funny. Haha. And then, you know, the sewer princess taking a risk. I did appreciate that. She like glued friggin' cockroaches to her face.
Yeah. What was the sidekick for Eureka? Can you guys?
That was Roof Trade, the dog. And Roof Trade got a lot of laughs from the judges, which, as you said, Brent, is like a big rule of Drag Race.
Yeah. I was just going to say that the sidekick for this one, I have it in my notes because I didn't write down the name, but I remember that the sidekick really made me laugh and it felt like something that was an actual sidekick that you would see with a drag princess. So that's why I think she was probably ruled safe.
Yeah, it's one of those things too where, like you said, Liana, I think when in the workroom she's talking about how I want to be a subway princess, she gets some shade thrown at her by Kimora, but you know, it's a really cool, interesting concept, and we see quite a few queens sort of go outside the typical fairy tale realm and say, you know, here's an intergalactic princess. But I feel like maybe the delivery did not meet up to the expectation in that regard. I do think the little touches like the bugs and the mice were funny, but I didn't get too much sewer queen from her, and which is surprising considering that, like, you know, with her hometown look in the first episode, she was really able to tell a story with one look. Mm-hmm. Here, maybe not so much. That might be more of a construction thing and less so about a design perspective. But I would say Eureka was fine this week. There were people that were a lot worse. And as you said, Brent, I thought Roof Trade was definitely one of the more humorous sidekicks out of the bunch.
Right. I think, again, that's why she was probably safe. Although I will say this, that I feel like she put a lot more effort into her outfit and a lot more professionalism into her outfit, albeit something that I didn't really care for, than the people in the bottom three did. So in any universe, I think she was probably going to be safe.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's hop on the train. Next stop, hashtag Princess Subway Fish with Alexis Michelle and her sidekick, hashtag Subway Tadpole. Liana, what'd you think about Alexis this week?
Get it with the Brandon, girl. Make your own hashtags. Get trending on social media. Okay, overall, oh my gosh, I don't know. Alexis Michelle, like, there are things that I absolutely love and then there's things that I absolutely hate. So like the green dress was simple, like the silhouette was nice, but I absolutely loved her hair, like the red, orange, green. I thought that the makeup was on point. I loved everything about that, but I don't get what part of her was Subway. Like, I was hoping for she was going to do some humor and like stuck some glue on her or gum on her or something like that, you know? And why was she holding a stick?
Yes. Oh my God. Can I bitch about this outfit for a second? What the hell was this? And how did this not get clocked? She better thank her lucky stars that other people were so utterly terrible that she didn't have to stand out there on the runway. I was just like, I was so the F over her in Untucked when she was talking about how she was like, well, how do you think I did? You know, should I have been in the top three? Girl, sit your ass down. I didn't even know what you were. You had your own damn hashtag. I thought that was really narcissistic. It read very acid Betty with the makeup. Like, I thought that the makeup was actually okay, but I didn't understand the damn stick. I didn't understand anything about it, and I hated the damn sidekick. The sidekick, what the hell was that?
Like, the sidekick was terrifying.
Oh, like with the hat, it turned around. It looked like a new kid on the block, like a Backstreet Boy. What was that, a sidekick?
It was Ornacia's second head.
Oh, Mike, I hate it. Like, again, this is somebody else. Thank God everybody else was so terrible, because you were freaking terrible. This is, what was that stick? Someone explain that to me.
I don't know, guys. Listen, I live in New York City, and there are people tinted blue with giant red hair clinging on to tree branches and festooned with crabs that go on the subway. We just tend to move to other subway cars when we see them. No, nobody lives on the subway or goes on the subway who looks like that. I actually did like the makeup. Was at least interesting to me. It was one of those things where you like do a double take where you're like, oh, there's like a different tint to your skin initially. So I thought the makeup was interesting in that regard. Like you said, nothing exactly screamed subway fish
or princess.
Oh yeah, so two-thirds of your moniker is sort of invalidated by the latter third. It doesn't exactly make up for it. She could have, you know, covered herself with maps, as you said, covered herself with gum. She could walk around, if they were walking with staff, she could walk around with a damn subway pole or something. I know that you obviously have to get, I mean, I don't know how feasible that is, considering that you need to get everything together and you obviously have not prepared your subway map dress, though that may work as a better hometown look for her than what she ended up producing in that first challenge. But I think the subway tadpole, I think, was supposed to be the take on, we get a lot of subway breakdancers in New York City, so I could kind of see that. Like, it has sort of had like the Jabberwocky makeup, yeah, those breakdancers from America's Next Best Dance crew, and it had like the sideways hat, as you said, assigning it to a new kid on the block or insert 90s boy band here. That wasn't really explained. I feel like there wasn't enough of a cohesive story there. There were things that I liked about the look and I liked about the sidekick, but nothing really came together for me.
I'm sorry, I can't get over the stick. Like, what? Why? Oh my gosh. Because, okay, like, I get it. I get where you're coming from, Mike, of like, okay, there's like, we could come up with some possible explanation for, you know, why her sidekick looks like this and maybe what she was going for, but oh my gosh, the stick.
I don't know, maybe it's driftwood, maybe. And again, if you're going, subways do not go in the water, at least not the lines that I know of, so I don't exactly know the purpose of the driftwood, but maybe Alexis will be able to clarify, because that's a little bit of a questionable choice. Speaking of questionable choices, the eventual booty of this episode, Kimora Black as Princess Banana Lady, ironically enough, hiding her booty, much to her own chagrin, and her sidekick, Funky Monkey. Brent, what did you think about Kimora's outfit?
What the hell was this? This is another thing that was just like freaking terrible. Like, so she's Princess Banana something or other, and she has a sidekick that protects her from small bananas so she can have all the big ones. So basically, she likes dick. Like, that's what they're saying here, okay? I mean, that's all this was about. That's all this was about. It was all about sex and dick. I didn't understand anything about it. I didn't understand how it was related to Princess. I didn't understand how she thought it was related to Princess. I thought the sidekick was terrible. She sounded like this when I'm talking like this, and I can't... Oh, yeah, I can't even do it. Like, the whole thing was freaking terrible. Girl, bye.
Okay, here's the thing I will give Kimora Black. At least I like, especially in comparison to maybe Alexis Michelle, like, she, her concept was very simple. It was what, Tarzan's second wife, but she, mm-hmm, at least it was consistent. And like, I could see like her outfit did look like something that, you know, friggin' Katy Perry wore in the Roar video. Like, she was out in the jungle. She had the, you know, she had skinned an animal, although I don't know what type of like white animal is in the jungle that she's in, but anyway. And then she had a monkey. Like, again, it was simple, but at least I understood her concept.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, I think she might have got clocked for going the more simple route and still failing, as opposed to maybe you give people like Alexis and Eureka more credit for sort of shooting for the stars and landing in the moon or whatever that phrase may be. I might be mixing my metaphors there. But yeah, I mean, again, she looked nice on the runway. I like the makeup that she had with the small little like hints of jungle warrior paint. I thought she looked sexy. We've also seen her look sexy the past couple weeks. I was waiting for, you know, a leopard skin captain's hat coming out, because that seems to be Kimora Black's brand. But it was very clear that this was a weak one. And yeah, the sidekick, as you said, Brent, it talked like this, and I'm a monkey. Like, again, if you're sounding more robotic than the actual robot that's about to come out on stage, right, you know that something's wrong. And I feel like the editors were not doing her a service either, with every time Kimora said something or did something, it cut to a confused look from Cheyenne or from Michelle. So I think it was very clear from the get-go, Kimora was not long.
Yeah, no. She was going to be booted, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I just spoke about the robot. Let's talk about Miss Nina Bonina Brown Pinkett Smith as Princess. Was it Princess Athena?
Princess Zarusa, or is that the planet she was from? I have to look.
She was from planet Bad Bitch Uranium.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Maybe she was going with Princess Zathura, the popular Jon Favreau movie, and her sidekick, Ink the Robot. Liana, what'd you think about Nina?
I guess, like, when I think of Nina from based on preseason coverage, like, oh, okay, yeah, this is what Nina does. Like, she's got the kind of cosplay, the headpiece. You know, it looked very similar to kind of the Peach, but now we're in silver. So I understand why she was safe, why she wasn't in either the top or the bottom. You know, it was just kind of a basic silver bodysuit. And again, like, not to belittle her makeup skills and like the way she did the brow bones. I mean, that was super cool, you know, with the makeup. But it was something that I think we've seen before. And this is a concern that I've had, is if she kind of keeps going back to doing this cosplay, that the judges, I mean, I don't know if they should be bored by it. You know, it is cool, but they might end up being bored by it.
Brian, what did you think about Nina?
I really loved this look, and I was sort of surprised that it was safe, actually. I thought it was top three-esque. When everybody else is doing mermaids and, you know, princesses and whatever, like, I thought this was interesting that she went to space. And I know you can say, well, I know this is what Nina does, but I felt like it was done so well, and the padding was so great. I mean, she always has hips and butt and boobs on the runway, like tits and ass. That's what she's got on the runway. She pads so great. She looks like a woman supposed to look to me, like a drag woman supposed to look anyway. And I really loved everything about it, because it was a head-to-toe concept with the sidekick. And even though it's something that maybe she's done before, and maybe that's why the judges are possibly yawning a little bit, you know, when you consider that something that was this amazing was placed safe. And somebody like Valentina, who we'll get to, who was amazing, I liked hers, but maybe not quite as going there as Nina did. So I really liked Nina's outfit. I thought that she was underscored because it was fully realized. The outfit itself was giving me like Spaceballs. It was very like Earth versus the Flying Saucers from like 1956, like, and yes, I looked that up because I was like, I've seen that movie, and I was like, when was that done? I don't know. So yeah, it was. She has some depth with her paint as well. Like, the paint that she uses on her face gives her fantasy some depth that I don't think other queens have.
I completely agree with you, Brent. I know Mike Block asked us, how was Nina not atop this episode? And I agree. I could see where you're coming from, Liana, in that, you know, one of the downsides of having such outrageous looks and having such a characterized way of being a drag queen is that eventually that shit's gonna get old. And I'm really hopeful, as someone who loves Nina, that it does not get old. But I mean, she's one of these people that said be creative, and she really went to the moon with it, quite literally, in that she created someone who is literally out of this world. And like you said, Brent, I thought the way that she painted it, she was giving to me vibes of the opera singer from The Fifth Element with that big head, which I'm assuming is paper as well. She also sold it. She was dancing down the runway. She was basically doing everything to sell that character. And big props to the sidekick as well. That might be the only sidekick where it did not look awkward to see someone's head on a 2D body. I don't know right. how they did it, but the coloring was exact. The shading and the lines on her face actually made it look like a cartoon character, which is astounding considering how weird the effect is with other people. So I have to give Dina a lot of credit. I'm a little surprised she isn't in the top, but again, there are, you know, 6 or 7 queens who all did really well in this challenge that any amalgam of them could have been in the top, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, well, I think I guess like that's where I'm coming from is that in isolation, if you look at this one look, it was very strong. But I think the fact that they're coming off of just having seen the peach look, like they're almost discounting her because they're like, oh, okay, we know that she can do this. We've seen this before, and not really kind of taking that look like for itself. So that's why I assumed that she wasn't in the top three.
Let's talk about someone who also really impressed me. Sasha Velour this week as Princess Aglina and the aforementioned sidekick Lump, I think, from Selfdoubtia. Brent, what'd you think about Sasha this week?
When I first saw this come out, I really thought this was going to be top three, but then I realized we hadn't even heard from her throughout this episode, so I basically knew she was going to be safe. I mean, that's the editing of RuPaul's Drag Race, at least early on when there's so many queens. I really loved everything about this look except for the dress. And that's where I think she probably ran into some problems because I think, you know, on balance, she probably had the best sidekick, maybe with the exception of Valentina, she had the best sidekick in the competition. Like the way her sidekick talked and acted and spoke, I could understand everything clearly. I knew what the story was. I knew where she was going with it. I knew how the sidekick related to her. It wasn't just her buddy. Like, I got what she was doing. Everything was great about this outfit, from the birdcage that was on her head with the flowers coming out and then, like, the red fabric that was coming down. Like, it sort of swooped around her outfit. Like, I really loved that. The thing, though, is that the dress itself was a little plain, and it also felt like the dress didn't quite fit her exactly perfectly. It felt like it was maybe a size too big. If you look the way the fabric sort of bunches up at different points, and I think that maybe that's why she didn't get as many props as she probably should have, because I know that people say, oh, Sasha's an intellectual queen, but she really showed it with this outfit and this story because it was something that I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I can't believe that actually came out of your head.
Like the birdcage came out of her head.
I know, right?
Okay, so I completely agree with you. I actually thought that out of all the queens, she had the best story that she had really put together. And it actually took me 2 times watching it to get it. Because at first I was just really confused, you know, because when they come out on stage, you're kind of trying to listen to the troll character and I'm trying to look at her outfit and I'm trying to listen at all the same time. And I was like, why does she have a birdcage on her head? But then you got the narrative of, you know, she was trapped by this troll and then he let her out and now she's free, you know, and that's kind of where the bird ring and the white head cage like all came into play. So I did like her narrative the best. I will say, yeah, that dress, she also suffered from, I'm just going to glue pom-poms onto the back of my dress, which I hated. So it didn't fit her. I was not crazy about the dress.
I do agree that I think she had by far the best story out of all of them. I mean, they even say this in Untucked. They asked for a fairy tale. She gave an actual fairy tale. Yeah, it wasn't just like an anecdote or a way to sort of put in some fun double entendres. She actually had like a moral to it and like three dimensional developed characters, which is, again, insane. But I think that's what Sasha is very capable of. That's what performance artists do. They create narratives and tell stories through really interesting ways. I mean, yeah, the look itself outside of the birdcage was nothing too write home about, so I can understand why she wasn't necessarily in the top three, but I have to give her major props for her story and her Gollum like sidekick as well. Really strong job from Sasha this week. Let's move on to someone else who I thought did really strongly, 3 in a row here, with Shea Coulee as Princess Aquaria and Moon Pearl, her ice fairy sidekick. Liana, did Shea freeze you over, or were you warming to her?
I thought Shea Coulee had a really, really strong performance this episode. As far as her sidekick goes, it was fine. I didn't think that it was one of the top, but it definitely wasn't one of the bottom. But when it came to the dress, I absolutely loved it. The blue sequins gown, the exaggerated mermaid cut was just so gorgeous. I also like the blue water corset and the neck piece. I may have taken the shell necklace off, but I thought that as far as if this was a sewing challenge, I thought that she made the best outfit overall.
I agree. Mm-hmm. As far as the outfit goes, I thought she made the best outfit. The corset and the neck piece really take it over the top for me. I thought this looked rich. It looked expensive. It didn't look like something that was just crafted together on RuPaul's Drag Race. And I don't know exactly how much of it she made, but it seemed like she made quite a bit of it. And as I said previously, as someone who was like going around the workroom asking questions, it felt like she was done pretty quickly. So it seems like she has her stuff together. The hair itself was funny because it reminded me of, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Hocus Pocus, but like Bette Midler.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like the hair was, that's all I could think of when I saw that hair. It's so many of the things on the runway. It's like there are callbacks to things like from the 90s or from like the 2000s. So I liked everything about this. I can't even remember her sidekick. So that's why I think that it was the little fairy with the floating fairy with the wings, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, but not the green one. That was Charlie's. This one was pink, which again is weirdly, at least should have been like midnight blue or, you know, light blue to counteract the outfit. It did seem to stick out a little bit. I also thought Shay's story was actually a little heartwarming as well. She was apparently born in the battle for love and freedom, and her star mother fused with the Queen Diamond, and her guiding light lives within because her mother is a star, which is like actually pretty well written for something you come up with on the fly.
Oh,
so
God.
It would be interesting if you took like,
like Mike, I'm a softie, you, Mike, I have some beachfront property in Alaska that I want to talk to you about after the show. Yeah.
If it's in Alaska, you have to PayPal me $10,000 in order for me to buy it. I like the story at least because, again, it wasn't amazing. Again, I still feel like Sasha had the best narrative, but at least it was more well thought out and going for more emotions than some of these other queen stories. So I have to give her credit there. I wonder if you took like Sasha's stories with Shay's construction, what you would have put together. I feel like that could have been a lethal combination if it ever happened.
Yeah, that seems like the combination that I would pay money for.
Plus, we got one of Rue's great lines, the why don't you come up and seaweed me sometime?
Anyone?
Like, yes, Mae West. I know.
And I love that they kept that in. That was so great.
No?
All right, so we talked about her many, many times, as is many queens during Untucked. Let's talk about Valentina here as Princess Vera, with Nebby, her shady godmother. Liana, did Valentina continue to deliver this episode?
Okay, here is the thing about Valentina this episode. She is absolutely gorgeous, yes. But really, this was a silver bathing suit, stoned, and she's got some tulle glued to her arms and her sides. Like, when I compare her to Shea Coulee, I'm just like, this does not deserve to be in the top three. Like, I'm sorry, am I completely out of it or what?
I think you're slightly out of it because I don't think you're giving enough credit to the sidekick and how much that won the judges over. Like, I think that they were thinking of her. Here's the thing, Liana. I think, like, we've gone through 8 seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race, 2 seasons of All Stars, and there's always talk of, you know, is a Latin queen going to win this time? You know, can one of those Latin queens win? Can a big girl win? You know, we've always said that. And then it never happens. And so you go to this season and you see Valentina at the beginning and you go back to our preseason coverage. And I didn't think very much of her back then. I listened to some of her interviews and I didn't really get her. And I thought, you know, she'll probably like hang around for 4 or 5 episodes and then be booted out. But that's not what I'm getting from her at all. And then so the judges go to this episode. They've seen her on the runway. They think she's beautiful. And then, oh, my God. She's funny, too, and we can understand everything she was saying. Like, it was so funny listening to her sidekick, and I love the fact that she went sort of an obvious route with the princess. I mean, it looked like a little bit figure skater-esque, but it definitely read more princess to me than everything else on the runway because it was ice and it was white and it was, you know what, she went the obvious route and thank you for that because everyone else was not doing what they were supposed to be doing. Everyone else was thinking, well, I'm going to be different. So by consequence, everyone's different and there were basically only 2 people, her and Trinity on the runway, who ended up doing an actual princess that I could buy, and those people ended up being the top 2. I think that I have written in my notes that she's her the beat. Okay, I think the beat alone is what got her that and the sidekick is what got her into the top 3. because the way she paints her face for television and the runway is just stunning. And look, you look at, I know we say, oh, well, you know, yeah, she's beautiful. So what? So what? It's drag. Look at somebody like Aja, who comes out there with makeup caked all over her face. She can't even see her eyes. Like, seriously, there are a lot of people who don't know what the hell they're doing in this challenge and in the show. It's nice to see somebody who knows how to paint.
She looked gorgeous. And I know, you know, I wouldn't say beating the dead horse because her horse is far from dead at this point. But I mean, she really is a beautiful queen. And I think she was able to really put those goods forward in the look that she put out. I do agree that they even talk about it in Untucked, how it was less ice princess and more ice skater. But as we said, the story and the psychic in particular more than made up for it. She didn't need a complicated narrative like what Sasha had.
Right. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you. I just want to say, really, I can't believe she can talk like that. She talked like B. Arthur, like after a night where she got laryngitis. Like, she was like, can you believe this? Like, I'm throwing shade and eyes. Like, I couldn't believe she could talk like that. I mean, I know I can do that, but her voice is so sweet and so nice. And she talks like, you know, with the way Valentina talks. Like, I couldn't believe that was coming out of her. And I know the judges had to be blown away by it.
And I wonder if she has that advantage over maybe someone like Charlie or Eureka, for example, who also put out very funny sidekicks, but you almost expect that of them.
Yes.
I mean, I think Cheyenne Jackson says, I'm so surprised that she was funny. And I wonder if she got catapulted maybe despite her look not being as much of a risk as others, because she was able to really surprise everyone by saying like, hey, I can be funny too. Trinity's another great example of this as well, of sort of breaking outside the box that people put you in initially, because I really do think that Nebby, this take on, you know, Navi from The Legend of Zelda, the floating orb with the wings around it, I thought was really, really funny. And I would agree, definitely made up for maybe the outfit that looked gorgeous, but maybe a little lackluster in comparison to what some of the other queens were putting out.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, and I do think that her sidekick was in the at least the top half for me for sure. But what I just think that she was overvalued, and I'm a little worried about all of this, like how this is going to end up impacting her like later on in the episode, in the show.
I don't think so. RuPaul's Drag Race, to me, I guess, are you saying that from somebody who's like rooting for Valentina? Like, you're worried that she's going to have a big fall? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I am. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that at all. RuPaul's Drag Race, to me, is the queen of the front running editing shows. And what I mean by that is, when there's a front runner, they just shove them out there. They're not afraid to say, this queen's probably going to win the season or at least be top three. Like, they're not afraid to say that. Think of like Bianca Del Rio. Think of Bob the Drag Queen, Violet Chachki, Sharon Needles, you know, Chad Michaels on All Stars. There's all these queens who, like, you basically know from the beginning, oh my God, they're probably going to make it to the end. And is there going to be a challenge somewhere where she falls on her face? Most assuredly. But on the other hand, that didn't happen to Bianca Del Rio. She never ended up in the bottom two. Not once did she ever lip sync for her life until the very, very end when she had to. So I think there's a chance that Valentina could make it all the way through. She's just somebody who's really amazing. And it's really going to be hard for her to make them unhappy with the way that she paints and the way she presents herself. She knows how to present herself for the judges. There are a lot of people who don't understand that. They have a concept and they have a story and they have this and that, but they don't know how to go out there, hit their mark, look at the camera, look at the light, smile when you're supposed to smile, and get the hell off the stage. And she just has that in spades.
I mean, I think no matter what the results may be, we are going to be talking about Valentina, I feel like, almost every episode, because I do feel like she has very quickly in three episodes become one of the queens to beat, which again is insane considering that no matter how much time she's been either doing drag or professionally or non-professionally, it's still pretty staggering for, you know, someone to walk in as sort of the new kid on the block and doing drag professionally and be able to slay so much. And I'm giving her all the snaps in the world for it. But we talked about this last week. Liana, I know you brought this up this week as well. Are we waiting for that other shoe to drop?
We will see. But for now, Valentina is not only considered safe, but is lavish with praise for her look and almost ends up winning.
I just want to say really quickly, because I know we're trying to rush through this last part here, but I wanted to say really quickly that Valentina, I love it that all of the queens were so freaking bitter. Like, they're so bitter with her right now, and I'm living for it. It reminds me of Bette Midler in Beaches when she won the Tony, and it's like CeCe Bloom, and she's like, did you see me win the Tony? Did you see those other brides gnashing their teeth? Ha ha ha. Like that's what it felt like with Valentina. Like, she knows she's good. When they clocked her in the workroom, she didn't say nothing to him. She knows, like, she's like, I got this. They're so bitter with me, but I'm living for it.
Well, someone who might not have been living for the remarks that the judges gave her. We talked about her before. Aja took a hard fall here as Princess Disaster and Desista, I was thinking like Ghastly from Pokemon, the like amorphous blob that had smoke clouds coming from it. Liana, what'd you think about Aja?
Ooh, girl, that was a disaster. She described earlier in the episode that she was going to go for something very avant-garde and high fashion. What about a rubber bra, rubber chaps, and freaking good old-fashioned granny panties, or I guess bloomers, as Peppermint would say, is avant-garde and high fashion? Like, and then she borrowed Shea Coulee's like Muppet coat. She looks busted. She's got carrot nails. I don't know what was happening here.
Oh my God, you guys. When Carson Kressley, during the judges' critiques... when he called her the heat miser, I fell out. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, it is the heat miser. If you guys don't know, it's like, what was the name of the show, Mike? It was like when Santa stopped.
Year without a Santa Claus.
Yeah, like the stop motion thing you used to see when you were a kid with the snow miser and the heat miser. Oh my God, it was the heat miser. I was living for it. I was through. Like, I couldn't see anything else after he said that. I just was, this was like when RuPaul's Drag Race just makes me so freaking happy. The hairline was so busted. How could she walk out there with a hairline like that? I don't understand. And the lopsided chaps. And they even clocked each other in the workroom. They're like, who let Aja walk out there like that? Because it looks awful. Like, everything about this was awful. It was colorful. It's like she was living in her own head. When she was, I was so taken by the fact that when she was on the runway and there was her little smoke cloud sidekick that was talking to her, like, she was just living for it. She was like, oh, this is the best thing in the world. Like, you know, don't you guys get my humor here? And of course, none of them did. But I was so thrilled that she thought she was so fabulous. And then she was going to get the biggest face crack of the century.
Yeah, this was, I mean, as we talked about before, she got a big lead up to this being like, I'm really confident. And to see, you have to question maybe her sense of moral judgment if she felt so confident about putting out this look. I mean, aside from, you know, the chaps being asymmetrical, I mean, the makeup, we have to talk about the makeup that she had, like big raccoon eyes. They couldn't see her eyes whatsoever because she just painted on her entire eyeshadow in just dark black where we weren't able to see. She was looking like Bablina the Blowfish was on fire.
You couldn't even see her. Now, let me say really quickly for anybody snatches me on social media, I know, look, I'm following her Instagram, okay? I know that her makeup has improved drastically since then. I get that. I get that she's learned. I get that. But we're talking about things on the show as they're presented. And as of right now, that makeup is busted, bitch. Like, there's nothing positive about that makeup that I can see. The lips are too big, the eyeshadow's too much, the lashes are too much. I can't even see your eyes. No wonder they put her in the bottom three. How can she not see this?
Some of these people didn't see it because she has too much eyeshadow on.
They get me so worked up. I'm sorry. I have to calm down.
They should do like a Year Without a Santa Claus, like Rankin Bass themed challenge. I would like to see that because maybe that's one she could win.
Oh, no, she'd be the heat miser and Shea Coulee can be the snow miser, or Valentina can as well. I think we've already got it cast. It's fantastic. Oh, she could probably kill the hell out of the lip sync to I'm Mr. Heat Miser. It'd be a weird choice of a lip sync, but
she was so bitter and untucked with Valentina. I was living for the bitterness. Like, the tears were delicious.
Oh my God, she was so mad.
So mad.
Yeah, and her explanation was also weird as well. She was just sort of like spouting off the mouth about like, no, I mean, disaster. I mean, she's from Brooklyn. She's Banji. She's gotten like everyone, just like Michelle being like, okay, did anyone else see that? Because I did not.
That's yeah. Todrick did have a good comment about that. He was like, "You can still do Banshee, but make it more polished."
And it was quite dull and very not polished whatsoever. Though the outfit itself was not dull, I think it eluded a lot of comments out of us. But I think I can say on behalf of all of us, deservedly so, ended up in the bottom. Though according to a couple of us, maybe not necessarily in the bottom two, taking out of account the lip sync itself. Let us finish things off strong here with our winner of this challenge, Trinity Taylor as Princess Aquapushy, to quote Cheyenne Jackson as Sean Connery, with the sidekick of Stinky the Starfish. Liana, was Trinity's performance stinky or anything but?
I would go with anything but. Definitely not stanky, except for Stanky the Starfish. I will love anything that is like a two looks in one. Like, give me a tearaway every day. So I loved when she came out and like she dropped the lower half of her dress. I mean, again, like it was a swimsuit, which I like, we've seen this on a couple of queens, but the fact that she had had that second look and the mermaid cut, but it was more like a jellyfish kind of cut, I thought was really, really beautiful. Her headpiece, so detailed with all of those little marine residents. I thought it was so cute. And then on top of that, the Sankey the Starfish. She had the humor. She interacted with her side click. Venereal disease jokes are always funny. Her name was Aquapussy. I mean, just all around, I think she definitely deserved to win.
She really did. I thought that she did a great job in this episode because she seemed like to know who she seemed to know what she was capable of. And I know she's a pageant queen. I feel like you could kind of tell she was a pageant queen because the way she did the reveal, it was very pageant queen-esque. But, you know, Mike, I love me a reveal, but you know what I like more than a reveal? I love me a swimsuit. And this bitch came out here in a reveal and a swimsuit, and she gave me classic princess colors, which after everything that I saw on the runway, I was so thankful to see. It was just like nice primary reds and blues and purples. It looked nice to see on TV. It looked very princess-esque. Like, her and Valentina were the two people that I thought, okay, I can buy them as a princess. Like, I really can. And the way she did the reveal was so professional. Like, she put Charlie Hides to shame. Charlie Hides, by the way, I don't know if you guys know this, but they do the runway twice. In the pilot episode of this season, the first episode of this season, when she came out and did that reveal, and she screwed up the reveal on the Massachusetts dress. She screwed that up twice, bitch. I listened on social media twice. Twice she did that. So Trinity comes out here, and not only does she not screw it up, she did it flawlessly, where she just unclipped it down, out, here I am. Like, it was just great. I love Stanky the Starfish. She went a really good way with making it pink and not brown. I don't know what that whole discussion was with the brown starfish. But beyond that, everything about this outfit was just, look, here's the thing. Were elements of it obvious? Yes. But as I said, when everybody else is not doing something obvious, when you're doing the one obvious thing, it looks really snazzy and it looked great.
Yeah, between the starfish talk and the cuckoo talk, lots of butthole talk this episode. Which again, I'm glad that despite moving from Logo to VH1, it has still kept its roots in.
Yes. Yeah,
I mean, I'll throw some more praise onto Trinity here. I mean, I just thought she nailed it. She was extremely polished, and that might be from her pageant experience. I mean, she was essentially doing the swimsuit competition, yes, right in her mm-hmm. final reveal. But I think what clinched it for her was Stinky the Starfish. And, you know, since she actually, you know, painted her face onto an actual starfish instead of having it, you know, CGI'd onto a starfish frame, it blended in a lot more. The character was there. I love the big bushy mustache and the eyebrows. And again, we talked about with Valentina, I think the fact that she was a little underestimated in the comedy department really blew the judges away, that she was able to surprise them so much as opposed to maybe some of the other comedy queens, which you expect to slay every single time. So Trinity has had a really interesting trajectory so far. You know, she was in the top last episode. She made it to the top this episode. I don't know why she said, "I finally won," considering that, bitch, this is episode 3. I don't know what you were waiting for. But she has also proved herself a surprising front runner, in my opinion.
Yes.
So that's really exciting for me, considering that, you know, between these three episodes, I think we've had, what, like 7 or 8 queens cumulatively in the top. So that sounds really good for other seasons where, you know, only 3 or 4 people were really contenders to win. That makes me really excited.
Well, I love it that she said, you know, "I finally won." It shows that she's hungry. I really get that. And this, to me, seems like somebody who is used to winning. Like, we talked about her in the first episode. She was like, you know, with Eureka, maybe she hates me because everything we've ever competed in, I beat her. You know, she's used to succeeding. So the fact that she hadn't even won a challenge up until episode 3, when she thinks she's putting out amazing looks, it was probably bugging the hell out of her. And I like that. I like that she's hungry.
All right, let's go to the lip sync here. Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler. Ironically, I don't know if you guys did. I heard that song in the Arby's commercial that aired on VH1 before the actual segment itself. So really weird brand synergy there. But Aja kills it. I mean, to me, the best Holding Out for a Hero lip sync will always be Miss Tandy Dupree.
I saw this when in 2006 when I was learning about when they were posting all these drag things on YouTube. This bitch drops down from the ceiling. Okay, she. Oh my God, I can't even talk. She drops down from the ceiling into a split. So she comes from the ceiling split. So freaking good. Like, everything about this was like, oh my God, this was drag at its finest. I was living for it. And I love that Aja was giving us a little bit of Tandy. She was doing some splits here and there, a few death drops. I loved, and you could tell she was hungry. And when Rue said, you know, Shantae, you say, she was like so excited. I love seeing that. I really do.
Well, Aja just had the energy, like the fight. And that's what I want to see in queens that are lip syncing for your life. Like, she wanted to freaking be there, and she was going to do everything in her power, all of the death drops she could do in order to stay. I loved it.
We didn't talk about this last week, but I'm going to put out a hot take here. I'm pretty sure Kimora Black knew between the two songs combined, maybe 60% of the words. And it shows a lot in Holding Out for a Hero. Every time it cut to her, she was not mouthing the right words. And that's not good. I mean, considering you have Coco Montrese do this really fantastic lip sync where all she does is just point to her mouth to say, hey, look, I know the words. That's one of the fundamental rules of lip syncing. And Kimora, between not knowing the words and doing her same old that she did last week of just sort of slinking around the stage, she hit the floor a couple times. There was a really awkward moment where both her and Aja went down, and Aja did the fantastic death drop, and Kimora just fell behind her. Like, what? Why would you make that decision? You knew that someone's directly in front of you. It's like what we were talking about last week with James constantly being magnetically attracted to Kimora for some reason. I mean, it was almost clear from like second three of this song that Aja was going to kill it. And unfortunately, we say goodbye to Kimora Black here. Liana, do you have any final words to eulogize Kimora on her way out?
No, but I will say about when both of them fell, it was, I think, I don't know where I saw this, but it was like a death drop versus dropping dead. Like, she just died. Like, Kimora just died. Oh my gosh. I can't believe she didn't know the words. When I was watching, I was like, girl, how do you not know the words to this song?
Yeah, Mike, I have to say, in the first 3 seconds, you could tell, because when they cut to Aja and she pointed her arms and she did the, you know, pose, tap, 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 I said, cut, print, check, please. Kimora Black, you've just been served. Girl, bye. Like, it was just, I love Drag Race when it's like that.
Yeah, I mean, and Aja really showed, again, we saw in the very first Untucked of this season, her saying like, oh, I, you know, I don't feel bad for anyone. Or I feel bad for anyone who gets matched up against me in a lip sync because I will kill them. You never know, considering the confident edit that she got this episode, as to whether she would deliver on that promise, but she really did. I really now fear for a good handful of these queens who have to go toe-to-toe with Aja should she fall into the bottom again, because she proved that she could sell it and she's got the moves to boot. And granted, lip-syncing is not entirely about who can death drop and who can jump into splits, but Aja really showed that she knew the song and she worked that song to death. And you can't really say that about Kimora Black, though I guess to sort of finish Kimora off, what I will say is, I mean, she was a lot of fun to watch. It might have been an Aegea gun, let's point and laugh at the things she says type of mentality, but she's still made for good TV, which at the end of the day is why we watch this show. And I do think, you know, Roger talks a little bit in the pit stop about how she thought that she was the villainess at first, but kind of showed some layers to her. I think watching Kimora leave an Untucked definitely shows that. She seemed actually pretty gracious with her edit, with her exit, I should say. Maybe not so with the edit. I think the jury's still out on that one. But, you know, she says how she had a great time there, and no matter what happened, happens. She's happy with how she did. Hopefully she learned some stuff as well about maybe making herself a more well-rounded drag queen. But I mean, she's beautiful both in and out of drag, and that clearly sells, and she's made a career out of it. So I have to give her all the credit in the world for it, and I wish her nothing but the best. I saw her husband actually wrote a really nice message on Instagram as well that was really sweet. Apparently, I'm the emotional one of this panel, I've realized over the course of this podcast, so maybe I was the most affected by it.
But, yeah, shady bitches over here.
But I do think that, you know, with Kimora being eliminated, these 12 are a really, really strong group of women. I know you said last week that it was eventually 12 season queens and one season prostitute. The prostitute went to go, you know, service another John, and now we're left with 12 very strong queens, and I'm super excited to see what Drag Race is going to bring us next with this Dirty Dozen.
Yeah, I was just going to say really quickly, just to clarify, because I don't want people to misunderstand. When I'm talking about drag, you know, death drops are great, kicks are great, that's all great, but there is a, look, this song, there is a natural build to this song, and Aja seemed to embody that during her lip sync, and with the way the drums work, I mean, like, this is like gay drag at its finest, and I say that for a reason. Like, it's just, these are like the songs that have been played in gay clubs and drag clubs for years. Anybody who's ever gone to a gay club, you know, if you're over like 30 years old, you know these songs. You've seen these songs performed at least 20 times. So when you see a queen come out, you're like, I want her to do it right. I want her to do it the way that I know. And there was a natural build to this song in such a way where you get to the point where you're doing the kicks and the drops. And Aja just seemed to know what she was doing, and Kimora did not.
Absolutely. And speaking of building, it seems like we are building to an end on this podcast. Fantastic work as always, Liana and Brett. You can follow all of us on Twitter to let us know your thoughts on this episode and what's to come with Drag Race moving forward. Liana is at Liana Boras, LianaBoras. Brent Wolgamott is at One Lucky Gay. I am at A Mike Bloom Type. If you are not already, make sure you are subscribed to our RuPaul's Drag Race only feed. You can search for any of our names or RuPaul's Drag Race Season 9 on iTunes. And while you're there, leave us a nice rating and review. We're always eternally grateful for all of our listeners and subscribers for tuning in to listen to us talk an hour plus every week about this fantastic show. And make sure you're checking out all the other great stuff on reality TV Rehap Ups as well. Rob has a website.com/rehapups, RHAPUPS, gives you access to the entire feed. To finish things off, can we think of some sort of hashtag for people who made it to the end of this podcast? I feel like there's got to be something with like Alexis's stick in there, right?
Oh my gosh, that's what I was thinking too.
I thought we were going to do hashtag blubber for my screw up on that.
I don't know. Depending on, again, where blubber might have appeared in the X-rated version of Little Mermaid. Yeah, I don't know exactly, if we want to get bungled with those.
We can do something about Alexis's stupid stick or something.
Such a stupid stick.
Let's do hashtag stupid stick. I feel like that's a nice representation of maybe. And maybe if Alexis or if someone can clarify exactly what the purpose of that stick was, we'll bring it up in the next podcast. But for now, it shall remain a mystery. Thank you all so much for tuning in and listening. We will be back next week talking about episode 4 of RuPaul's Drag Race Season 9. But for now, sashay away. Bye!